As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to You Irons, the West Ham podcast from the good people at The Athletic. I'm Sam Delaney, joined as always by The Athletic's West Ham correspondent, Rashane Thomas. And we join you a couple of days after a real disappointing defeat against Everton. We could have put ourselves in pole position for a Champions League place. We couldn't quite make it. We lost 1-0. Rashane, what did you make of the game? Was it that we were bad? Or were Everton just very, very good at stopping us?
A bit of both, really. But I actually felt like the killer blow was the day prior with Chelsea getting the winning goal against Man City. And really and truly, Sam, it's all Sergio Aguero's fault. It's all Sergio. All he had to do was just pull it in the bottom corner. And then, you know, it was still a chance to top four. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. I just felt like, obviously, we all know pretty much every match right now is for West Ham as a must win. But for that match against Everton, it just felt like a game where we just couldn't lose. Like, just don't lose the match. And I felt like that pressure sort of got to the players because in the first half, I thought we were a bit poor. We didn't match the intensity we showed in the Burnley game. After the second half, it looked a bit different. So you could tell the players sort of said at halftime, come on, what are we doing? Like, there's a lot to play for here. And I thought we improved a lot in the second half. But yeah, just gave Everton too much respect. I felt like Ben Griffey had too much time and space on the ball. We weren't really closing down Calvert-Lewin's runs. And obviously his goal as well could have been, Craig Dawson could have done better in terms of defending that. So yeah, it's a match where you're thinking, oh, a draw would have been good. You know what I mean? A draw would have been good, but unfortunately we couldn't get that. And at the end of the game, right? So as I told you previously, Sam, I have this habit of looking up and seeing how the players react, looking at the director's box. I saw Karen Brady like applauding the players off, but I couldn't help but look at Vadim Safar at the end of the match. Like he looked so distraught. So distraught, he was on the turf, sitting down. He looked towards the bench. Then he looked up towards the heavens, just shaking his head. And then after, he got up and just kicked the ball in frustration. Like, I could tell by all the players, it really affected him the most.
I don't think any of the players have got anything to be ashamed of, though, after their performance. You know, there was a few players who were a bit below the heights we've seen them play at this season. But I look at it, I mean, I was distraught. After that result, I sort of second half, I had a sinking feeling. I thought we're not coming back. I could see that Everton had set up. It was a classic Italian manager. You know, they Italianed us, basically. I mean, they were so resilient. Their defending was just in terms of the individual performances by all of their players, but also by the shape of their side. Made it so difficult for us to play through them. And then, of course, when we were reduced to launching balls, we're playing with one striker, quite a lot of smallish players around him. And they had done a job on Antonio by putting Yerry Mina on him, who I thought was superb and just nullified Antonio for most of the game, really was able, unlike most centre-backs in the whole Premier League, was really able to match him physically. And I thought they just did a really, really good job against us. But I can't really look at any of the players or even David Moyes and say, oh, you let us down or you let yourselves down. I felt that some of the passing, you could see that there was nerves. You could see that they knew there was pressure and they knew there was a big opportunity for them. Because forget about Chelsea City. Leicester losing against Newcastle meant that you know, I'd already thought, well, Chelsea are getting away from us here. But suddenly the opportunity looked to be replacing Leicester. And that was, and they could see that. So the fact that Chelsea won didn't really matter anymore. You look at Leicester's remaining fixtures that are very difficult, and you sort of think, we've got a real opportunity here if we beat Everton. And I felt that the players had that in their mind. Now, if you take that and you add it to the fact that we are missing two of the great leaders in the team, Declan Rice, the captain, Angelo Bonner, who's very much like a lot of the time is the vice captain, and also is the guy who leads our defence. And then on top of that, Mark Noble's missing as well. The fact that we are still competing at this level, the fact that there are three games to go and we still have a chance, however small, of qualifying for the Champions League, and the fact that we are doing all of that despite having been missing Rice, Ogbonna for large parts of the season, other crucial players like Antonio and Cresswell, it's absolutely remarkable. We lost 1-0 to Everton in a game that was extremely tight. And let's not forget, we dominated possession and we did have, I would say, two very, very good chances. You know, on another day, Benrahma might have buried his header, or Kufau's effort might have just been half a centimetre further inside the post.
And Bowen with the rebound.
Unlucky the way it came back at him. And so I think it's hard to sort of put the blame on West Ham, considering circumstances. In fact, I've almost become so philosophical about it that I think we should be really proud of the fact that despite being riddled with injuries and all the crucial players missing, and then even losing Lanzini and Cresswell during the game was won by one sucker punch goal.
True. And I forgot which West Ham account it was, because if I knew, I'd give you guys credit, but someone pointed out that they feel like Dawson struggles has been down to Rice not being in the team. And I think it's an interesting point, because if you think of someone like Ogbonna, Diop to an extent is, but on a Dawson, they're not really ball-carrying defenders. So while they're good in the air, good at making tackles and whatnot, and good leaders, they don't really carry the ball from the back. That tends to be Declan Rice. He'll drop back into that defence position and then make driving runs forward. Well, him or Thomas Suchelcheck. And I feel like without Rice being in the team, they have to do that a lot more now. And that leads to mistakes. So I thought that was an interesting point. And you know what? My other takeaway from that performance as well, Sam, it just shows how profligate, I think the word is pronounced profligate, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I'll be reading dictionary, Sam. I'm trying to learn these new words.
It's impressive, mate. Just remember, go easy on me, because you know, I'm going to nod along and pretend I understand, mate.
So basically, it just showed how like lack of consistency we are in terms of attacking chances. So barring that chance for Calvert-Lewin, I can't really think of like any other like major opportunities Everton had at scoring.
Apart from the second half when there was a clearance off the line, I think.
Oh, yeah. By Dawson. But we had, as you touched on, Benrahma, Safal, Bowen. And if you look back on the previous game against Burnley, Antonio had loads of chances and other players. Benrahma had a chance in that match as well. So I feel like one thing we need to improve on, don't get me wrong, it's been a great season, as we all know. But in terms of our weakness, we definitely need to like try and cut out not putting away the chances, because in the game against Everton, when Benrahma missed that chance, you sort of knew, okay, that's going to come back to haunt West Ham. You just knew straight away it would come back to haunt West Ham. As you've touched on, nervy game, one of those matches where if you don't bury it, you're going to regret it. And I just feel like something we need to improve on next season in terms of just being more clinical.
Of course, but you know, you look at it and we are so unused to being in a situation like this, West Ham. We've never been in a situation like this. We have never been chasing a Champions League place this late in the season. I mean, really, truth be told, we've never chased a Champions League place apart from very briefly in the last season at Upton Park. But that was a dream that sort of emerged and disappeared within the matter of a few weeks. Whereas we have now, since the turn of the year, been consistently in the running. There's three games left. So as I've said before, I'll say it again, this season is a massive success, no matter what happens. We might not feel that way if on the last day we wind up finishing eighth. We'll feel, oh, that's a shame. But on reflection, we will know that this has been a superb season for us, you know. But we're not used to competing at this very high level, at this very, very high level. When you're competing against the sort of clubs we are, who are rarely going to make mistakes or lose, then, of course, you have to be taking every single chance you can possibly get. Now, Chelsea sometimes aren't doing that, and they've got people like Timo Werner playing for them, who they signed for crazy money in the summer, and even he misses chances, right? I think, and I don't know for this for sure, but I'm pretty sure Antonio would have scored more goals than Werner this season, you know? Of course we need to take every chance, but there's only a few strikers in the Premier League who are doing that. If you maybe have Harry Kane, do you know what I mean? But even if you look at the team who are going to win the league, City don't have a player like that anymore. You know, Aguero's not that player anymore. Jesus isn't that player. Liverpool, their players have been misfiring this season. You know, and so, yeah, if we had a clinical striker, if we had someone who was as clinical as Harry Kane, i.e. someone who is going to bury 9 out of 10 chances that he gets every single week, right? Then we'd probably have won the league this season. But it's just not going to happen. We could go out and sign Tammy Abrams or this lad at Seville who we're after or whatever. Might not make a difference. You know, even if we go out and sign both of those, I think we're going to, you know, it would be a miracle if we have a season next year as good as this one. So it's just we're competing at a level now where you look at that game against Everton and we really competed in that game. Yeah, we were disappointing. Yeah, we didn't play like we had done against Burnley, where it felt that every time we had possession, we were going to create something. But yeah, we weren't playing Burnley. We were playing Everton. This is a team who spent millions in the summer. They got Carlo Ancelotti, one of the world's best managers, coaching them. You know, and we went toe-to-toe with them, and it was an extremely tight game. And truth be told, that's happened in most games this season when we've come up against Liverpool, City, United. Pretty much on every occasion, although the result hasn't always gone our way, we have gone toe-to-toe with these teams. And when you play against these teams, these are elite, global elite clubs, a lot of them. You know, like, it's a tiny margin, and it'll be a split second of magic from one of their players. I was thinking about it and thinking, you know, a lot of United fans like Lingard, but a lot of them are a bit sceptical about him. And the reason that most people say that Lingard fell out of favour, I know he had personal issues, but from a playing point of view, is that when United have to deal with every single game they play being against the team who were going to, home or away, defend against them, right? And West Ham aren't used to that. We're not used to watching West Ham go up against teams who want to sit back, right? And that's what even Everton, which is a massive compliment to us, Everton turn up, and I wouldn't say they park the bus, but it was an approach to the game that was wholly based on stopping us doing what we do. And that's what teams at the top have to deal with every single week. And that is the level West Ham are currently having to operate at. We might not next season, but this season, that's what we're having to operate at. And when you take all of that into account, I am still astonished that there are 3 games left. There is still a chance of us qualifying for the Champions League, however much that seems to be fading. It is a chance. Yeah. It's a reasonable chance. I'd stick a quid on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe not 2, but I'd stick 1 on.
1.50 maybe.
Yeah. And you know, and we've had injuries and we've got the smallest squad in the Premier League. I'm astonished. And that's what I had to tell myself, because it, not even joking, it hit me very hard, the result on Sunday. It really hit me hard because we had a lot of hope. After Leicester losing, there was a huge amount of hope. You sort of saw this becoming an absolute reality. As you said before, I could hear that Champions League music. I could hear it, right, inside my head. And so it hit me hard, but I had to work very hard in my mind afterwards to get myself back into a place where I could get up on Monday morning, carry on with my life, mate. and all you can do is look at positives. And it is astonishing that we are where we are.
Hold on, I forgot what game it was. Oh, I forgot what match it was. But you said after, I think we either drew or lost. And you said you went for a long nap after. You had the long nap.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember what game was.
Sometimes. I do that sometimes, because sometimes if the emotion gets too much for me, I have to just switch off.
Yeah.
Because I have to escape into sleep. Mate, I do that just in my life generally. Sometimes if I'm like, if I'm feeling tired, or no, not obviously if I'm feeling tired of sleep, but if I'm feeling like angry, right, or frustrated or grumpy, I catch myself and I think, bloody hell, mate, you're being a bit grumpy. And then I think, well, you're either hungry or you're tired, like a toddler, right? So I'll have a snack first. And if I'm still feeling grumpy, I'm like, right, that's me off to bed, mate. I set the alarm on my phone. I give myself half an hour. Don't underestimate the power of a quick nap.
I know. See, I'm the same, to be fair. I think a lot of us are like West Ham, play poorly or lose, get annoyed after. So I used to go on walks, but it's not helping, because sometimes I'll be walking past and I was like, oh, did you watch the match, or oh, did you watch the Arsenal play, or did you watch Chelsea play? I think I don't hear about football right now. I'm devastating, right? I don't hear about football. So, you know, I started doing some.
Yeah.
I've downloaded this game, right? Classic games. I'm not sure if you remember it from when you're younger. It's called Roller Coaster Tycoon.
No, I don't remember it.
Okay, really, really good game plan. Roller Coaster Tycoon route, right? I downloaded it. Oh, it's helped me out big time, mate. It's helped me out big time.
Do you build roller coasters on it?
Pretty much. Basically, I have a profitable business right now called Fort Park Replica.
Yeah.
That's what it is, pal. Fort Park Replica.
And what are you playing this on? Is this on PlayStation or what?
No, on my phone, on my Samsung. Getting on my Samsung, mate. So, but you know what? Just touching the earlier point about players who can make something out of nothing. You mentioned De Bruyne. Remember his assist for Ruben Diaz in that 2-1
exactly.
defeat?
Exactly. Yeah,
something
that's
like
it.
That. But you
that game was tight until he yeah. caught. And that's what happens. You've got a player like that who can pull it out. We've got lots of players who, I mean, we might get a chance later to talk about the Premier League team of the season and who we feel West Ham players should be in it. I would probably say it should be about 10 West Ham players. But to be fair, I will hold my hands up and admit, and I've admitted before, I barely watch other teams, so I just don't know. I just assume, well, no one could be better than all of our players. But, you know, we've got a lot of good players, but then there's maybe half a dozen players in the Premier League who are world elite players, and they will do that to you. Like a De Bruyne or a Salah or a Harry Kane, you know, some of these players will just pull something out of nowhere.
Yeah, for sure. But you mentioned the earlier point about Tammy Abraham or the Seville striker whose name is Youssef En-Nesyri, about whether or not they'll make an impact for us to sign them. And I actually feel like, listen, they're both great strikers in my opinion, but as it pertains to Tammy Abraham, I feel like he's massively underrated, and I can see Moyes getting the best out of him. My colleague Simon Johnson reported on Monday that West Ham want to sign Tammy Abraham alone this summer, because obviously, as we all know, Chelsea want in the region of like 35 to 45 million for Tammy Abraham, which in the grand scheme of things, looks unlikely. Bearing in mind, the club spent, 45 million on Sebastian Haller, and they're still coming to a get about, 2 years on.
Yeah.
So, but if we do get him alone, right, I feel like he'd be a great signing for us, Sam. I really do. As I touched on, I think he's massively underrated. Like, massively underrated. Mm. He's scored 8 goals this season, and he's hardly played since the turn of the year.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Plays for England. He's got Champions League experience. In fact, my piece this week will be on, where he would fit into the team. And what I've noticed, he's such a poacher. Like, he scores tap-ins. And we need a player like that. We're not going to have a striker who's going to dribble past, 5 players and score.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Antonio is, I love Antonio, but it's hard to categorise him, Antonio. He's not like any other player in the Premier League, really. Certainly no other striker. And he's not, this sounds really harsh, but I wouldn't say he's like a natural finisher. There are certain players, like Harry Kane's sort of player, who, if he's played in and there's half a chance, he doesn't even need to look. Do you know what I mean? He's like, it's a terrible cliche, but he knows where the goal is to such an extent that you just get the impression he's the sort of player who just trains day in, day out, just finishing from every conceivable angle. So he knows what he has to do. Some players are like that. Robbie Fowler was like that. Michael Owen was like that. They just kind of, you give them half a second and it's a first time finish straight into the back of the net. I don't think Antonio's that kind of player. Tammy Abraham, a real just dyed in the wall goal scorer finisher, but also with a lot of pace, and he's strong as well. To me, mate, he seems very similar to the Lingard signing, i.e. a player who has played for England for whatever, is at a club that's so big and rich and successful that they've kind of somehow found themselves on the fringes. But that's only because of the size of club they're at. And if someone showed a lot of belief in them, then they could really become a superstar. And that's basically what Moyes has done with Lingard. And I think that, I don't know what Abrahams is like as a bloke. I'm not comparing him to Lingard in that sense. But I think that, Moyes has proven now that he can take someone who perhaps isn't being shown the sort of support or confidence that he could be elsewhere, put that into him, turn him into a world beater. Plus, the fact that he's young and English, I just sort of have this feeling that he would fit in to our setup. Do you know what I mean? Just in the way Lingard has. The way Lingard has slotted in so well and become obviously so close to people like Rice and Chriswell and Noble and Antonio. Do you know what I mean? I can really see Abraham doing the same thing. So I hope it happens. Whether or not Chelsea would be willing to put him out on loan, I just can't tell really. I suppose it would make sense. They certainly don't need money. And if he came to West Ham and managed to bag 20 goals, then that means his value could potentially double the following summer.
Yeah. So, in all honesty, I'd rather West Ham sign him than bring him on loan, because we've seen it with Lingard. Great loan spot so far, but it's only going to make Man United increase the price when it comes to negotiating. And the thing with Tammy Abraham, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but he's a good singer. He's a very, very good singer.
Really?
Yeah, he loves R&B song, Tammy. Loves R&B song.
I don't know about you, but I always look for that in a player. I like to know that they've got a good singing voice.
Yeah. So obviously you got Lingard dance moves. You got Antonio dance moves as well. Rice, the drums, Four Niles, the drums.
Yeah.
And you got Tammy Abraham, one of the leaders. This the band.
That's what you said. You go, this mate, join the band. Join the band. We're going right to the top.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hello listeners, sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
You've got to have ambition. We got to qualify for Europe. I want to go away. I want to go and watch West Ham in Tbilisi. I want to be in a situation where there are no flights left. So I've had to get 3 trains, a ferry and a hire car and a coach to get to Tbilisi to see West Ham play. That's what I want.
Sam, we need to get you some flip-flops, some quarter length, some sunglasses, pal. We got to get the
I want to get my Sam Delaney on tour kit ready over the summer, mate.
For sure. That's
what I want. I've no idea what this Euro conference is or whatever it's called. I've never heard of it. I can't for a moment understand why they would have bothered invented another bloody tournament when everyone's sick of the Europa League and the Champions League group stages as it is. So I don't know what's going on with UEFA. You might be able to tell me about that. But I'm not even sure whether I want us to get into that because I don't understand what it is. Yeah. But I'm happy to see us in the Europa League. And I think now, I don't know what you think, I think that's probably the most likely scenario looking at the fixtures. I think we will get enough points out of these last 3 games to finish in the top 6.
Yep. In terms of West Ham potentially finishing top 4, I think that we massively rely on needing Leicester to have a massive blip in form. Leicester will face Chelsea, Tottenham and Man United. We need them to ideally lose two of the next three games.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think that, there's two things about that. I don't think that necessitates a massive blip in form because their form isn't great. They've been, they have really like been lacking for a couple of months now. Do you know what I mean? They're only still up there based on the amount of points they accumulated earlier in the season. Don't forget, it's not that long ago that we battered them, end up being 3-2, but really, let's be fair, we battered them. Now they've lost to Newcastle, which, by the way, made me feel a little bit better about us losing to Newcastle as well, right? They are not in the best of form, right? It was the same last season. They fell away. Don't know whether it's because of the way that Brendan Rodgers makes them play or train. They seem to fall away at the end of the season. They have got seriously difficult last three games, with the exception of I could see them beating Tottenham. I don't think they're going to get a result against United or against Chelsea. I don't.
Well, fingers crossed, Paul, because if that could definitely play into our hands in terms of our relatively easy games coming up. But as I touched on earlier, Sam, I'm just not confident. I know you mentioned two players we missed for Brighton, but I'm just not confident for this game.
But what is it that scares you? You've mentioned this several times over the last few weeks, right? Even three games ago, you were already fretting about Brighton and Hove Albion, mate. Just because they've beaten us all, I think we drew with them earlier this season. It's still bright. It's bright. I mean, I don't want this to come back and haunt me. I'm not saying they can't beat us. Of course they can beat us. But think of everything we've achieved this season. Almost every time we've played a team who are below us, we've beaten them. That's what's interesting. You know, we've struggled against the teams around us, but we've kind of made, we've always found a result against the teams who are below us.
Yeah. It's true, but it's Brighton. I've been having nightmares about this game, pal. I've been having nightmares. It's Brighton. And you know what? We haven't won the Amex in 10 years? Since 2011. And do you remember that? We haven't played much there.
Yeah, I mean, they've only been in division a couple of years.
That's a fair point. But remember that game last season where we were like 3-1 up and then 3-3 draw against Brighton?
Yeah, but we were in a relegation battle at that stage. I remember watching that game. That was, believe it or not, that was near the beginning of. Yeah, it was near the beginning of 2020. It was just before lockdown and COVID. So I remember being away working in Edinburgh watching that, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But that's a different West Ham. You know, they are we this season we drew against them, right? But it was at Christmas, and weirdly, we picked a very peculiar team that day. Moyes.
Oh, yeah, that's a fixture,
He was resting players because we had such a busy fixture list. And he picked a peculiar team. He put Noble back in. I think it was Dawson's debut. He'd left picking Dawson until that point. And Johnson played and actually scored. So it was like he played a weird team who hadn't played with each other much before. And I felt that if we'd played a first choice team, we would have beaten Brighton that day. So I think now you got Dunk is obviously their best defender, and you got Morpay, who's their threat going forward. They don't have much of a threat going forward other than him, in my opinion. Rice is back for us. And these are the sorts of games where there is a little bit more space. These are the sort of games like the Burnley game or when we played Leeds or when we played Sheffield United. These are teams where you tend to see players like Lingard, Benrahma, if he stays in the team, which he may well not, Bowen. These are the games where those players get to thrive a bit more. It was bloody tough for them against Everton because Ancelotti just knew how to combat their threat.
Yeah.
There wasn't all that space that they're usually running into, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So I should be at the game on against Brighton on Saturday because they'll be giving out two passes for us, which has been very, very nice. So yeah, that'll be a nice trip to the seaside, pal. Yeah, hopefully it goes our way because we're in battle and definitely
great away day. One of the best away days in the Premier League you can go to.
For sure. What is it I'll tend to get when I go Brighton?
Stick a rock?
Yes, that's it.
You really go and get yourself a stick a rock.
Get yourself
up the pier, mate. I like to go. I took my boy there last time we played Brighton away, and it was still August. And it was the best day. We went down. We got there early so we could go up the pier. And you know what I like to play, mate? The old coins. You know, You know, the coining machine.
I love that.
When I'm at the seaside, I love to get on the coins. I love coining almost as much as I love football, mate. For me, it's the perfect day out. You get at the pier, you get on the coins, you win a couple of little souvenir key rings out of the coining machine, right, with your little plastic tub or two-piece. Then up to the game, and then we went for a pizza away. A bloody brilliant away day, that is.
You got to spend like £20 to get the key ring because it never drops at the right time.
Mate, it's not about the money, right? it's about the taking part, yeah? You just, the sense of, you can't put a price. You cannot put a price, Rashane, on the sense of joy and satisfaction you get as that little key ring falls from the shelf, right? Oh, and into that little door where you can grab it. That feeling, you get filled with such satisfaction and euphoria. I don't care if I've spent 40 quid in 2p pieces to get there. It's well worth it.
And you know what? For some reason, right, the chips taste really nice in Brighton. Mm. It tastes, and then you've got the seagull trying to bother you as well, trying to get some of the
seagulls
chips.
Will come and nick them because they know how good they taste. Yeah. It's a great place, mate. I'm delighted you're gonna have a great day out, and I think we're gonna win it. I think we got a very good chance of winning our last three games. I wouldn't be saying that if Declan wasn't back, but with Declan back, I think it gives a team a really good shake up. It releases Souček, right, in a way that he hasn't these last few games with Declan out. Souček's had to be doing much more defensive duty. He hasn't been able to be making so many marauding runs into the area. So many tight games. Exactly like, I mean, funny enough, it was Souček who won us the game against Everton, which was just as tight. We beat Everton at Goodison, but it was a very late goal from Souček in a very tight game. And it was just Souček being in that advanced position that he gets himself into when Rice is playing that won us that game. It was a deflection and he finished it off. And we haven't had that from Souček. Souček has not been. And I think, you know, if Rice had been playing against Everton, we would have. First of all, I think he would have got hold of that situation that led to their goal much sooner. I think he would have, like you say, he would have brought the ball out from the back more, which would have probably created more space for our attacking players. And I also think it would have meant that Souček, because when we were hitting high balls into the area, their defenders were very good at clearing those, but a lot of them were just being aimed at Antonio, who's decent in the air, but not a major threat. You know, I think if Souček was had more ability to go forward, but remember, for most of the game, he was partnering four nows. So even more than when he's got Noble next to him, he had to do all the defensive responsibility. I mean, four nows is great at shutting players down and getting around, but he's not someone who you just say, sit there in front of the back four like Declan Rice does.
Yeah, for sure.
That said, I thought Hornhouse was our best player.
You know what, right? Because before the match, I saw this clip on Sky Sports in terms of like Oscar nominations. What's been goal of the season? What's been sign of season? And before the video, like a little preview video, so I didn't get to see who Antonio picked for unsung hero of the season. But mine will definitely be Hornhouse because... Mm. The way this guy's improved, my goodness. And I wrote a piece on it in February. I said, right, Four Niles is that song you skip on shuffle. It's that song, it's the song you skip on shuffle, right? I mean, you know what? Let me just listen to the song once. I keep skipping it. I might as well listen to the song. You listen to it and you think, you know what? This is actually a really good song.
Yeah.
It's a really good song. And that's Four Niles because he struggled in his first season, as we all know. Played on like left back, right back, midfield, left wing, right wing. It's all over the place. Now he's got a position he's good at. Even when Lanzini came off, because Fornals started in the wing. When Lanzini came off of injury, Fornals went in central. Souček still played well. Like, this guy's improved so much. I'm happy for him because it goes to show that, listen, every player will struggle to like acclimatise to a new league, different system, but there's a good player there. And we're seeing that in Fornals and we're being rewarded with that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this.
Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But Striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although Striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F.
Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts, and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
I tell you one thing, there's a lot of fans saying we better spend money. We've had such a good season, they've got to back Moyes now, and we've got to sign real top-class, world-class players. And all I would say about that in the aftermath of the Super League is that, of course, part of you, your heart as a fan, always wants your club to sign superstars, right? But I think people need to join the dots between things like the Super League, which we were all against, and the fact that we as fans constantly demand more from our clubs in terms of the money they spend, right? What clubs like West Ham and even much bigger clubs like Manchester United have got themselves involved in is a situation whereby no matter how much money they have coming in from TV and sponsorship, they always somehow find themselves spending more, right? Against projected future earnings, which in the case of a club like West Ham aren't even guaranteed because we're always one season away from relegation, right? So if we are the sort of fans who are going to be constantly saying, I don't care, Sullivan needs to get his wallet out, Sullivan needs to buy this player, that player, and the other player, we just need to do it, if not, it's a disgrace. You need to sort of start thinking to yourself, listen, this doesn't necessarily make sense. This is why clubs found themselves in a situation where they were trying to join a European Super League that we all hated the idea of. But why that Super League was being formed was largely because these clubs had over-leveraged debt, right? And the reason they had had to go into so much debt is partly we as fans play a part in that because we demand more constantly, right? We think, especially at this club at West Ham, and by the way, I'm bored out, but that's because I think that they're not very competent, right? I don't think they're good for the culture of the club. I don't think they've managed the club well. I don't think they've been honest with fans. But when it comes down to money, especially after the Super League, I now think to myself, I don't think I'm going to judge these owners on the basis of how much money they spend, because I actually don't believe it to be true that they have a load of money that they're pocketing for themselves. I think the club as a business is being run probably beyond its means as it is. So I don't necessarily want to see us be stretched even further just so we can have the short-term thrill in a transfer window of hearing that we've signed 3, 4, or 5 superstars. And what's more, I find it much more satisfying, 10 times more satisfying, when we unearth a Soufal, a Souček, a Bowen, you know, these players who weren't huge money, but have come in and have made a huge difference. A Dawson, look at Dawson. Dawson has been a revelation this season, right? And we got him for next to nothing. So I take much more satisfaction from that than I do of going out and us buying, you know, I mean, there's not been a big signing that West Ham have made that has worked out in almost ever. I can't remember a record signing ever just coming in and being brilliant. The best signing we ever made actually was Dean Ashton. Dean Ashton was the best record signing we ever made under Alan Pardew, and unfortunately he got injured. But that's one of the only times I can think, well, we've gone out, we've splashed the cash, we've really gone for it. Like, you know, we're going to bet the whole lot on red, and it's paid off. And even then, because we're West Ham, we have bad luck and the bloke gets a career-ending injury a couple of years later. You know? On the whole, I don't want us to go out and do all that stuff.
I've got to give you a clap for that, Sam, because you're absolutely on the money. Absolutely on the money. And again, it's good culture because what happens with the likes of Saval, Dawson, well, not Dawson, he's slightly older, but Solček, resale value, right? God forbid we sell him anytime soon. But if it does happen, we're getting loads of money for him.
Yeah.
Loads of money for him.
When was the last time we sold a player for a profit, right? We might say if we sell Rice, that's different. This is a player who's come through the academy. But how often do West Ham go out, sign a player, and then sell him on for like a huge profit? Of course we don't, because we either make the wrong signing or we completely overpay in the first place. So there's no hope of them ever going up in value. And we make humiliating losses like the one on Sebastian Haller. You know, I don't want us to be that club. That is not us. And I don't. And I think our fans, we should all learn to be a little bit more humble. We should learn that the Super League is partly, not entirely, but partly the result of a culture amongst fans, many of whom think that it's as easy as playing FIFA or Football Manager, who just want more superstars and say mad things like, why aren't we competing? Chelsea are signing this player. Tottenham are signing that player. United are signing that player. That's the level we should be competing at. No, it's not. We shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Just get used to it. You chose West Ham. Take some pride in the fact that we're not a club who just throw money at a situation and buy success, right? Take some pride in the fact that you're willing to support a club through bad times because we can't just buy everything that we require. Take some pride in the fact that we have been one of the best teams in the Premier League this season precisely because we had a manager who had the courage and the balls not to overspend in the last two transfer windows and work harder with the resources he had at his disposal. I feel a lot more proud of supporting a team like that than I would do being a fan of City or Chelsea or any of these other clubs who fix the slightest problem by going out and just spaffing 100 million quid up the wall. I don't want that. That's why I support West Ham. So I think everyone should think about that in this transfer window.
You've actually just given me an idea for a piece, Sam. You've actually just given me
That's
an
what
idea
I was trying to do. Yeah.
Well, I agree. Yeah. Definitely, you're spot on. And I'd imagine all the listeners will definitely agree with that. Myself and others are definitely agreeing the fact that I get more satisfaction out of seeing someone like a Solskjaer coming in who we never heard of and seeing him do well. That means more, a lot more to me than signing someone like Sebastian Haller for 45 million and then we just lose, what, 20, 25 million when we sell him. Doesn't make sense. So.
Let's not be Tottenham. Let's not be a bunch of spoilt brats who are constantly asking their parents for bigger and better Christmas presents, right? Let's not be those guys because sometimes if you look at Twitter, there are West Ham fans who are like that. And it's like, get real. Let's not be babies, right? We're West Ham. We don't need to be doing this, right? Let's go out and fight. Let's this summer hope that David Moyes goes out and finds another Thomas Suchet. That would make me delighted. I hope that our striker ends up being a player who's sitting here today on the 11th of May, you and I have never heard of yet. But by this time next year, we're both going to have tattoos of his name on our arm. And it'll be difficult because the name will probably be Czech. That'll be all weird letters.
We can get a matching tattoo. We can get it done in Brighton Park. Matching tattoo.
Yeah, beautiful. Now you're talking. Right, let's wrap it up. Anything big for us to look forward to in the Athletic this week?
So, yeah, my next piece this week will be on like just looking at where Tammy Abraham would fit in at West Ham. I'm definitely going to do a piece on Sam's passionate speech just now on why
we
shouldn't buy an expensive signing, but look out for more hidden gems like Safal and Solček. And providing it goes to plan, this Saturday I'm planning on doing a big read on what on earth happened during that 2010-11 season when we got relegated.
Oh my God. Well, there's a lot of stories to tell there. Well, I look forward to all of that. That sounds brilliant. As masochistic as it might sound, I think I do want to read a long article about our last relegation, weirdly. But I suppose that's another part of being a West Ham fan. Thanks, ladies and gents, for listening. Let's keep the faith. Let's celebrate what's been a great season. And here's the 9 points to round it all off. Come on, you Irons. And remember, everyone, there's only one. Sir Massey Abu!
The Athletic.